We just wanna party.
I gotta carry him. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go into this. Yeah, yeah, this is Gorilla. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go get the bag. Yeah, yeah, or I'ma get the bag.
That, if you haven't been paying very much attention this week, is This Is America by either Donald Glover or Childish Gambino, however you want to think about this. We're going to kick off the news today by talking about that. We're down in New Haven. Got to tell you who's here. Binnie Klein is a psychotherapist, an author, and a radio host of her in her own right on WPKN. Pedro Soto is an account executive at DRT Power Systems in New Haven. Mercy Quay is founder and executive of the Narrative Project and the host of Work It Out. Like that?
Work it out.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. I'm a white person. It's going to take me a couple times, you know.
The rhythm is challenging.
It's going to take me a few times to just master that. On WNHH. I assume it's on WNHH, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You didn't tell me that part. Okay, so we are going to talk about, in fact, Donald Glover and this song. And I mean, it's so much more than a song. I mean, first of all, the video is intrinsic to understanding the song. And there's quite a bit more, I think, to build on from there. A little bit later in the show, we will perhaps be discussing a somewhat less inspiring African-American musical artist. His name is R. Kelly. He's been banned from Spotify, which... it just sounds kind of funny saying that anyway. And speaking of being banned from somewhere, Monica Lewinsky was banned from a major philanthropic forum by Town & Country magazine because it turns out they'd invited somebody else. Guess who? So all of that will be a part of our conversations today, plus some endorsements we'll make at the end. But we are going to begin with Donald Glover. Do you have a plan right now? You want to bring it up for like two more seconds here just to sort of, once again, get people in the mood? The first time this was seen, I think, probably for most people, was Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. Last weekend, he was doing perhaps an unprecedented thing, which was he was there as Donald Glover, the host, and Childish Gambino, the musical performer, two for the price of one. It was the second musical performance of the night was this particular song. It was announced, I think, not insignificantly by Daniel Kaluuya from Get Out. I want to try to set it up a tiny bit more before we get talking about this. So what you see, for those of you who have never seen this, what you see in the music video, and they tried to recreate it to a certain extent on stage there on Saturday Night Live, is a shirtless Donald Glover, who, by the way, turns out to be in better shape than anybody might have guessed, and who, as you can hear the songs begin, it begins in a very... not only benign, but very elevated
joyous
sound, and we're going to have this wonderful party, and everything just sounds kind of terrific. Very quickly, it turns bad. There are gunshots. There is violence. We maybe won't describe all of the violence because, in some ways, if you haven't seen it yet, you want to be kind of punctured a little bit by that violence the first time. It is something of a shock. So, Mercy, let's just start. Like, what do we have here? African American artists these days make protest music a lot, but this seems to have held up its hand and stopped traffic a little bit. So, what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, so when I think about this piece, and I'm trying to think about it in three ways, right? The piece of art as the music and the video together, and then each of those pieces separately. Because I need to assess them separately as well. And what I continuously get in that assessment is you know the meme with the dog in the burning house and he's looking around and he says, everything's fine. Yes. This is fine. I think I, while we're all sort of trying to figure out what Childish Gambino, Donald Glover is trying to tell us, that's the only thing that comes to mind, right? This is America. We are in a burning building, but this is fine. It's fine. Everything's fine. Right? Like,
Definitely.
And I don't know if anyone else sort of got that assessment, but you have the sort of the kids in, I think one of the articles that we passed around via email said in magnet school uniform, dancing, and every now and again, Donald Glover joins them in dance. And right, I think the bloggers and the pontificators were online thinking, well, is this saying that's like children are distracted or that they're not tuning in? And I'm just like, I think it's saying that we're distracted, right? Like we as a people, not children, there's no assessment on age. We're distracted because we kind of have to be to continue living in a burning building.
Yeah, Peter, you want to take it from there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's actually a really good point in terms of how the song feels.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, you know, as we're hearing it in our headphones now, I mean, it's, you know, the main parts before it goes into like the rap sections, especially when you're watching the video with, you know, with the dancing and with the choreography, you're listening and it really, you know, part of you is like, wow, that's a really great song. Like,
right.
I want to hear that.
Right.
Right. And it gets really ripped away from you each time, especially in the video, obviously in very striking ways. And it is sort of that, like, you know, we're trying to be pulled, you know, it's sort of like the we want to be comfortable, we want to enjoy, we want Childish Gambino to come up with another, you know, awesome, soulful, you know, retro song, and he's like, nope, not going to do that.
And then we're assaulted by a defibrillator, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, violence is constantly backgrounded and then foregrounded, backgrounded and then foregrounded through the movie, through the video. I don't know, Benny, I'm just sort of going around the table, just getting some initial reactions.
Yeah, sure. I had a very intense reaction to the video. And it kind of went subjectively in four movements. Like first there was what I would call the primary source viewing, which happened to me when I did SNL, which didn't have any of the gun violence in it. But I still felt like, wait a minute, this is really transgressive. There is something going on here with the choreography, with the faces he's making, with the way he's using his body that I've not seen on network TV. And it felt very much like performance art. So that was number one. And I was just like blown away. I was disturbed. I was confused. I was curious. Then I go, of course, to the actual music video, which, as Mercy described, has all kinds of much more elaborate choreography and very disturbing gun violence. So in one scene, he shoots a guitar player. In another, he shoots a choir of black people. And meanwhile, the children are still dancing, and there's this sort of happy-go-lucky but distorted feeling to everything. Then I went to the secondary sources, you might say, which sort of reminded me of like reading in graduate school, where like you see the thing first, you read the book, and then you read all the critics. And of course, I was curious, like, what were all the references? You know, was that so-and-so in there? What was there a rap battle going on, you know? And it made me think about something that I then heard recently Tahishi Coates say, which is that white people don't have to know everything that's going on. Because, I mean, like he said, just like you don't have the access to the N-word, you also don't get to have this inside baseball stuff. But I was feeling like this was a Rorschach, this was an ink blot. In that I could only see it through the lens of myself, and I could only see it through the lens of being a white person. And everybody and anybody is gonna have a different take on it, a different perspective. So then I tried to go back to the original video to feel that same impact, and I was left with this final movement to my series of movements, what is my voice? And I realized in approaching this show today that I was nervous.
Hmm. Well, you know, I'd also like to kind of enlarge this and talk a little bit about Glover himself, who's really kind of emerging as a very unusual kind
he's
of performer
so complex.
Creator. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you've got a guy who, on the one hand, he's created this show Atlanta, which is this sort of unbelievably trippy toggling back and forth between the traumas of being black in America and some very, very funny stuff about being black in America. Mm-hmm. And has this very surreal vibe that wells up in it as well. That's like him. He has created that. He stars in it. He's obviously been introduced to America through Community. Mm-hmm. He's got this alter ego, Childish Gambino, who raps. He is about to encroach even more deeply on Pedro's world very soon as Lando Calrissian in the next Star Wars installment. And what else? So he's going to be Simba in a live action Lion King.
He was in The Martian,
right? And he's going to be
love that movie.
He's going to he has an expanded role in the next Spider-Man movie too. Mm-hmm. I think he has had a very funny little cameo in the last one, and I think he is going to be some kind of villain, but probably a fairly appealing villain. To me, one of the things about this video is, despite that body of work, both in existence and to come, I think the first thing Donald Glover does is break down our ideas of Donald Glover. Mm-hmm. He's like,
yeah, absolutely.
Right? Like
I mean, he continuously reinvents himself or reintroduces himself to us, right? We were initially introduced to him via Community, where I think audiences were able to, I'll say strip, and then I'll say forgive him of his blackness, right? Because mm-hmm. he was sort of this quirky nerd, and you weren't forced to see him as black. And then if we fast forwarded to Atlanta, it's sort of this like reclamation of his blackness, not for himself, but sort of mm-hmm. to audiences. Wait a second. Yeah, I'm the funny kid from Community that you got used to. You sort of fenced into your living room, and you were able to forgive me of my blackness, sort of suspend the threat of my blackness. But now I'm going to reintroduce myself yet again as his character in Atlanta, which is
Earn
in Atlanta. He's a rapper, and he's a baby daddy, and
he's still kind
producer.
Of Charlie Brown. Too.
He's very Charlie Brown.
He's Charlie Brown if Charlie Brown were black and a little bit more angry.
And even in Atlanta, he refuses to be boxed. He mm-hmm. absolutely refuses to be boxed. And as his under his rapper name, Childish Gambino, which even the way he came up with Childish Gambino is a great story, which is he and his friends were on a Wu-Tang name generator, and Childish Gambino came up, right? Like, he continuously reintroduces himself to us, and I love that because I think that black men, black women, black people as a whole are boxed into this theory of understanding, right? You are this thing. And that comes out of, in a lot of ways, sort of these three stereotypes of black men and black women that were born out of Reconstruction. And we see that displayed in This Is America, mm-hmm. right? Sort of the stereotype of the Mandingo, the stereotype of Sambo, and then the stereotype of the Buck, right? Sort of the idea of an aggressive black guy with his shirt off, right, dancing in sort of this minstrel show. And then the Sambo is like, wait, no, actually, I'm a really a jovial black guy, and I can dance, and I can be happy, and it's great, and it's fun, and you're okay with me now, right? And I just find that so transformative. And he continuously surprises me, and I love that about him.
Well, I also want to, Ta-Nehisi Coates notwithstanding, I want to push back a little bit. I mean, and I, by the way, I love that idea. I love the quote from Ta-Nehisi Coates, but I feel as though the strength of this particular work of art, the video, is it does stop everybody in their tracks. You know, I mean, there's a lot of really interesting protest music. I mean, you know, there's a way in which, like, I happen to really love the album Black Messiah by D'Angelo, mm-hmm. which is like trying to say a lot of these same kinds of things, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure that it would have the kind of crossover pop appeal that this does. This does because it sets that hook, right, Pedro, mm-hmm. at the beginning, because it says this is going to be this benign, fun kind of mm-hmm. thing that you're going
right.
to kind of enjoy, you know.
Is that the Afrobeat background
yeah.
to
yeah.
it?
And then smacks you with it really hard. I actually do mm-hmm. think this is the kind of piece of art that really will, well, it's going to have 75 million views on YouTube sometime around right now.
Mm-hmm. During the show.
Yeah. During the show, we think, yeah. And I just feel like this is the kind of thing that somehow or other, has a mystique to it that, like, we're all going to want to dive into it a little bit more.
I hope so. I mean, there's this American humorist, you probably know Finley Dunn, and he said art should comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. And boy, if this doesn't do that,
right?
It certainly does. And I think the gun violence in the video is probably one of the more provocative things for people. Like in that article you sent around, Colin, from Vanity Fair, where they were kind of like not so hot on what Childish Gambino did, they were saying, like, well, what's he selling? I don't think that's the right question. I think this is something like a protest art and provocative art and transgressive art that's going to be analyzed for a long time.
Right. I'm pretty sure that was a black writer saying that.
Right.
And so not necessarily asking a flatly commercial question,
for
but
sure.
Sort of, okay, we have to watch you, this guy we really like a lot, do a lot of really horrible things in this video. Why are you doing that to us?
And he hasn't told us. he hasn't told us why he's doing this to us. And to address Ta-Nehisi Coates' quote there, I just want to be clear, we don't know what this means either, right? Like, black people don't know what this, we don't want to have a rubric
right.
to this. there are things that I think, Benny, taking I think what you said to heart a little bit for me, watching this with my partner, Jesse, who is from Wyoming. I use that as a dog whistle to say he's white. that is where they make white people, if you were not aware.
But it was Texas. Right.
No, they just fly up out of a hole in the ground.
Exactly, yeah. Out of Wyoming.
They're not even babies.
Watching it with Jesse, we stop it, we talk about it. He's like, I don't understand this. I'm like, while I don't quite know what he's trying to tell me, there are so many things in this that are just familiar to me. There are just things in this that are familiar to me that I can understand may not be familiar to you.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because some of the choreography, I felt like I knew in some unconscious way what it was referencing, but I didn't know the words for it.
Right.
And then later in the so-called secondary sources, I would see words like minstrel.
Sure.
And this and that. And I was like,
and then
oh,
snap
okay,
to you, right?
Maybe this, maybe that. You know? And just like the poignancy of the way at the very end of the, I guess it was the music video, that young black girl is moving her body, and then like, I don't know what these gestures are, but they are affecting me in some way.
Right, and I mean, and in the same way that Beyonce's Lemonade sort of was evocative of these old black motifs, right? Like, this piece for me is just, well, we don't get as much time to sit with it as we did with Lemonade because that was an entire body of work. This piece for me is just, it's reminiscent of my youth in a lot of ways. Uniforms and line dances, right? Like, and choir, right? Or even the first guy who is shot is sitting in a fold-up chair with a guitar on his lap. And for me, that's just, I'm just immediately snapped back to, like, my grandfather or my uncles in the South during the summer sitting on our porches with a big guitar on the lap, barefoot, right? Like, these are sort of the images that are just familiar to me.
Doesn't it seem to you also like SNL, not to get too deep into that show, but is getting sort of very hip lately about racial stuff?
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of pressure put on them to do that.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, black performers existed in such a minimal state there that they were pressure.
Yeah, but like the night that this premiered, did you see the scene where three guys do a takeoff on a Migo video, and it's called like Therapy Migos.
Yeah,
and it's and Donald Glover is one of them.
Right. No, they're definitely doing this. I just want to come back to. I mean, Pedro, in some ways, I sort of feel like, you know, whether or not we can do this very careful exegesis on the video, in some ways, it's also a conversation starter. And I think as the kind of artist that he's turning out to be, he wants us to have this conversation, and not for nothing. Actually, when I first got an analysis pushed at me, because I have a student at Yale this year in my class who is a young woman from Kenya, and so I've signed up for this thing. I think it's called Face to Face Africa, and it like pushes all this really interesting African news at me. And in Africa, they were already analyzing the Donald Glover video, but it falls here in New Haven on this week, where Yale has had this incredibly uncomfortable, was probably an understatement story, in which a student was detained by the police for 20 minutes simply because she was sleeping in one of the common rooms at the Hall of Graduate Studies.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean that whole event it does tie on to several other events recently. You know, the Starbucks event and the Airbnb. The interesting thing about those, all of those, is all of them rose to the occasion because every single person was someone, like the people at Starbucks were some entrepreneurs who were actually very successful. You know, I think it was Bob Marley's daughter.
Yeah.
And then you have, you know, if you've seen the woman speak on Facebook, you know, very, very, you know, a graduate student who has a lot to say and kind of was very well prepared for this event. And so it's really, it is amazing that the timing just happens to be that. And you know, the question is, I think it shows you, you know, how much this must be happening for people who do not have the platforms
sure.
that all these people had.
Which I think is very much one of the messages of Atlanta. I mean,
yeah,
Donald Glover says, this is not a series about these funny black guys who sit around smoking weed all the time. They're smoking weed because they have PTSD
right.
from being black in America, mm-hmm. and they're too poor to afford therapists.
And
so that's what they're doing.
Self-medicating, right.
Yeah. And the other thing about the platform and the timing is, you know, in about 2 weeks, Donald Glover is going to become, right, a global star on the global stage. And you know, with the potential to really just be pigeonholed into action hero person forever and be rich beyond his wildest dreams. And he, you know, I think he picked this moment very carefully because mm-hmm. he's managing to tie something very important that he wanted to say, along with the fact that he's about to become, you know, one of the most, you know, famous faces in the world.
That's a great point. Maybe we'll end on that. It's a great observation. Well, if you haven't watched this video, go watch it 6 times.
Yes.
And because one is not going
to
do it.
And listen to it in headphones.
You're right, exactly.
Put right.
some headphones on.
Yes, headphones
video.
Would be a good idea. Mm-hmm. And speaking of headphones, put them on right now. We're going to go out with the other new Childish Gambino song. This is Saturday, which was also performed on Saturday Night Live last week. We are live doing the nose here down in the studios at beautiful Gateway College in beautiful New Haven. Our beautiful panel includes Abidin Klein, a psychotherapist, author, and host on WPKN, Pedro Soto, an account executive at DRT Power Systems in New Haven, and Mercy Quay, founder and an executive and executive director of the Narrative Project. I'm not going to snap my fingers this time. And the host of Work It Out.
There it is.
On WNHH. So, we go from Donald Glover, for whom the sky doesn't even seem to be the limit. I mean, I feel as though there is a lot of growth ahead of him, and he's already a pretty big star, to somebody whose star, I think it could be said, might be on the wane a little bit, although you never know. And that would be R. Kelly. R. Kelly was pulled. His music was pulled from Spotify, the very popular streaming service, as was the music of XXXTentacion, who I don't really know. This hasn't been covered very much, but a 4-song alt-folk album by Eric Schneiderman was also pulled off of Spotify. That's a joke. That's there's no Eric Schneiderman album. R. Kelly obviously is a person with a pretty troubling background. The stories about him are upsetting. His music is often quite sublime, which is disturbing. But you've heard some of the stories anyway. That it seems as though he has held women more or less against their will, has had some kind of a sex cult. It sometimes is, I don't know. I don't even know how to describe all of the things that have been
right.
alleged about R. Kelly. We'd be here all day. But certainly his behavior crosses about every possible line that we could imagine. But we're still, you know, Pedro, we're still in that sort of, I mean, first of all, it's very amusing to me that Spotify winds up being some kind of referee.
Right.
but anyway, yeah.
And they did something actually pretty interesting. They didn't remove him from Spotify. Mm. So they did thread a needle on, I guess, on their side, and they said, we don't believe in censoring artists. However, we do have editorial authority in terms of you know, kind of the homepage and recommended tracks and things like that. So they kind of removed him from the algorithm. Mm-hmm. So if you
really want R. Kelly,
if you really want R. Kelly, you can listen to it, but they're not going to be promoting him in any way. So I thought that was sort of an interesting way to prevent, you know, the heavy hand of these services that, you know, we increasingly get all our music from sort of being an arbitrator, you know, entirely. But I do think that, I think they're right. I think that in terms of actively promoting and going out of their way to say, hey, you guys really should listen to this track. It's really good. By the way, he's a monster. We're finally, I think, getting to the point that it's just like, look, you're a terrible, you've done terrible things. You're not special anymore. You know, we need to, in some ways, we need to clear the stage for all the people who don't have that voice, and who are not terrible, or who are underrepresented.
There's just R. Kelly has just somehow evaded authority for years, mm-hmm. and you know, without giving away all the family secrets, I just want, like, this is a moment where, like, Black people are really reckoning with some of our favorite mm-hmm. artists. Mm-hmm. Bill Cosby is one right. that I've talked about on the show several times. And R. Kelly is now sort of facing the hammer. And rightfully so. I just want to be out there saying rightfully so. And we have this conversation on this show here often about whether we should separate the art from the artist. And Brian Slattery, last time I was here, actually gave me a really good formula for how we can do that, right? Is the art better than the artist is bad? Mm-hmm. And R. Kelly does not meet that standard for me, right? Like, he just doesn't. We're talking about classics, quote-unquote, like, mm-hmm. Locked in the Closet, right? Like, With a Little Bump and Grind, right? Like, I Believe I Can Fly, right? Like, those do not excuse, right, his horrific person, right? I mean, specifically because, like, if we think about things like the fact that he married a 15-year-old,
right.
He was married to Aaliyah. For a period of time, he was married to a 15-year-old Aaliyah, and not just the Black community, everyone looked past that. We just saw past it.
Well, I think it's interesting the in terms of saying if, you know, is the artist better at good? I mean, it's, in some ways, it's like, okay, well, that means if you're really, really good, then, you know, you just have this larger stage to be awful on. I think that equivocating the art, you know, it's a slippery slope, problematic.
Sure. I think there's another way to look at it, too, and it's Wesley Morris brought it up about a week ago in connection with Bill Cosby. He said, mm-hmm. look, I don't care what Will, I mean, he didn't say I don't care. He said, irrespective of what Bill Cosby is, there's this thing I got.
Yes.
And millions of Americans, Black Americans in particular, got mm-hmm. from the Cosby Show.
Right.
And that cannot be taken away from me. It simply can't. I mean, even if you wanted it to, even if I wanted it to be taken away from me, it can't.
And also, right, not just to the Black community, to the white community, because for the first time on TV, we were right. seeing images of the Black family that wasn't indicative of this, quote unquote, moving on up, mm-hmm. right? Like, and I'm specifically referencing the Jeffersons, right, because up until that point, that was the image of the Black family. We have to move up. We are doing that, right? Like, we are breaking right. the bounds of oppression to be seen on TV, whereas the Huxtables just were. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time that we saw that on TV. And for white Americans especially, that was a turning point of, wait, I can actually see the Black family as something other than, I don't remember what Mr. Jefferson was.
Dry cleaner.
A dry cleaner, as something other than service industry folks.
Mm. You know, just to play around with it a little bit of a different way, or sort of turn it on its head, Benny. So first of all, Dave Chappelle famously said, you just have to accept the fact that the same person who wrote I Believe I Can Fly urinated on a 15-year-old
right,
girl.
Right, exactly.
And so from Chappelle's point of view, you should accept both of those things. That if you regard, I mean, there are, I'm sure, millions of people out there who consider that one of the most inspiring songs that they've ever heard and have assigned it to themselves and to their own quests in all kinds of highly significant ways. So maybe it's not quite the Cosby Show, but you sort of think about that too. What about somebody for whom that song has become an incredibly important thing? Do they... can it be taken away from them, I guess?
I'd like to go back to a word I used earlier, which is nervous.
That's funny.
This makes me nervous. And I completely understand what's being said about the hateful. You know, the thing that Spotify said was that they now have a policy regarding hate content and hateful conduct. Mm-hmm. And those are two extremely different things. And then later they go on, and they don't really specify what they mean, but they say that whatever artists they're going to push are going to have their values. Well, what are the right values these days? It just seems like every other day a monster is discovered.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know? So there's something about this that frightens me in terms of censure. And the excesses of our pulling the curtain back and the Me Too movement, I don't know. There's something unnerving about this to me.
That's right. We have a lot. Yes. I mean, we have a lot of referees and people in striped shirts with whistles, and we don't have a lot of rules for them to consult. So, mm-hmm. I mean, certainly if you look at sort of the banishment of Garrison Keillor and, as you were suggesting, Mercy, the time it took to banish R. Kelly, whose sins, no matter what we decide they are,
right.
are just massive compared to some of the things that other artists have been exiled for, it does seem as though there's some kind of course correction needed. But I think what Benny's saying has a lot of truth to it, too. We don't really know what the rules are. It's all kind of intuited and guessed at from moment to moment.
And I think part of that is because it means that we have to reckon with some of the awful things that we or members of our family or our friends or our network have done. Because and I want to come back to something you and I kind of rapped about, Colin, a couple months ago when Toothbrushgate happened at, was it Hartford?
University
of Hartford?
Oh, yeah.
Right, sort of this mask-off moment of you don't really know who anyone is until they actually reveal themselves to you. And that's not to say that this is who R. Kelly is, because he's been revealing himself to us and women for years.
Please stop.
But it is sort of this, we don't know, there's no rule book, because we now have to create a rubric for how to deal with people that we love who are awful people, who have been awful people or have done awful things, and we don't really know how to referee that.
Well, and there's a whole, I'm sorry.
I think one thing that's interesting is, I guess, maybe we should work backwards. We knew what the rules were, right? Powerful people could get away with anything, and if you were male, you know, it was even easier, and I think there, or almost like a privilege that you had, and I think that that's gone. So, I think that we kind of know where we were going from, and I think that that's, now that that's been taken away, okay, well, what's our new, are our new standards?
Although, has it? You've just provided the perfect segue to our final topic. Powerful people could get away with anything, especially if they're men. So also this week, Monica Lewinsky, I thought she was invited to some kind of philanthropic event. It's a philanthropic forum held by Town & Country magazine. But as she was packing to go, it turns out that she was disinvited. The reason? Because the invitation that had been extended to Bill Clinton had been accepted by Bill Clinton. He was coming, therefore she needed to stay home, which tends to suggest that maybe we haven't done all the work that's necessary on this. I mean, it's sort of an interesting
for the
thing.
Town & Country set. Yeah.
Right. I mean, first of all, bad staff work by Town & Country. That they could even get themselves into this position. But it's also an interesting moment. Like, having reached this incredibly awkward crossroads, what do you do, you know? I mean, I'd like to think that they would say, well, you know, we've invited Monica Lewinsky, Mr. President, so if you're going to be uncomfortable, you should know that.
I think they both should have gone.
Yeah.
I think so. I think so, too. But also, if I were standing in Monica Lewinsky's shoes right now, it would feel like this is the worst Mean Girls moment ever, right? You can't come to the party. We invited Bill, right?
Like,
that would be the most Mean Girls moment ever. And I think that, right, we're adults, and we are almost 20 years from this incident. Why?
Almost to the day.
Right? Almost to the day, right? Why wouldn't it be possible for these two adults who have accounted for and sort of atoned for their actions be able to be in the same room?
And I think from what she said, and it's funny how all of this came out via Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. That is absolutely true. There has nothing
that's
has
kind
ever
of a big
been
deal, like,
said by any party.
Right.
Town and Country, the Clinton Organization, Monica Lewinsky have all, at
not
least
officially.
In public, mm-hmm. in the public utterances of all.
And
all
it shows
tweets.
You now the uses of Twitter, how Monica Lewinsky came out and said, like, well, you know, don't just throw me an article and try to, you know, appease me. He won and that's not fair. But I can understand where she's coming from because she has been trashed from day one. Mm-hmm. And she's still being trashed.
Yep.
Imagine if this story, if the Monica Lewinsky scandal came out in 2018. I mean, you know, this would be, it would have been the end of his presidency, I think.
Whose presidency?
Of the Clinton presidency at the time. I think it should have been. I'm saying Bill Clinton's presidency. Mm. But for all, you know, political reasons, complicated, I think it would have been better. But anyways, I think that, you know, the fact that she really is one of the first meet. I mean, she was 17, 18, right, 20. She was very young and was taken advantage of by the most powerful man in the world. And I think that...
there's perspective there.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, you know, Town and Country, come on, 20 years later, someone should say, yeah, I think that... that we shouldn't invite. We should tell Bill that if he wants to come, that you can come and not disinvite for, you know, what discomfort he might feel.
Right. I mean, I do think that one reason that it's hard for them just to shake this thing off and, yeah, well, we can both mm-hmm. go, is because the handling of this is disproportionate. Her punishment is like a Greek myth.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. it just doesn't ever stop. She is, there's no way she can stop being Monica Lewinsky. She seems like a very interesting person. I spent some time on her Twitter feed today. It was very interesting. She has a lot of different interests, including Childish Gambino, as it turns out. And she's very funny, and she often has like just exactly, there was some other big story recently in which an intern was being blamed, and she just retweeted it saying, blaming the intern is so 90s. You know, I mean, she's got a good sense of humor, even about who she is and where she's been, but it doesn't matter. She mm-hmm. is suffering this Greek mythology punishment, whereas he's been able to recast himself repeatedly.
Right.
This is something that kind of drags along like a piece of toilet paper that's stuck to his shoe,
right.
But it's not him, you know? And I think mm-hmm. the disparity between those two states would be very uncomfortable at a Town and Country pageant of philanthropy.
Yeah, there's this word that comes out of How I Met Your Mother. It's called revertigo. Right, reverting back to a time in the past when you were interacting with someone, reverting back to who you were in the time when you were interacting with someone from your past, right?
Yeah.
And I think to your point, Pedro, we see Monica Lewinsky with our 2001 eyes, mm-hmm. and not with our 2018 eyes. We are all suffering from revertigo when we think about Monica Lewinsky, even though we have gone through this entire Me Too movement and we have this opportunity to actually rethink. Right, reconsider what we thought about Monica Lewinsky mm-hmm. back then.
I, you know, Vinny, I think one big change, and you and I have, I think, watched this unfold a bit, is the difference in the identification of the woman in these stories. So you and I have lived through a time where who was having sex with Jim Baker? Jessica Hahn. Who mm-hmm. was sitting on Gary Hart's lap? Donna Rice. Mm-hmm. Who was the beautiful woman walking around with Ollie North? Fawn Hall. You know, we knew these names. And then Monica Lewinsky became sort of the apex of that, this name. I don't know the names of the women who were in the room with Louis C.K. a lot of the women who are now abused by men in a way that I think is very healthy, they don't become famous for that in a way that mm-hmm. women did in the 80s and 90s. Maybe that's a big difference that you're seeing here.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, and the tables have turned appropriately so where now it is the like the male, and for years women have been, this has been the thing that they've carried
they've
throughout their
vilified.
Career. They've been vilified. They've carried the scarlet letter, and now there's been a ceremonial bestowing the scarlet letter onto men. And I really appreciate that.
And also, it seems like those accused in this Me Too Wu-Tang generator. We're going to get to it. I have our names. They're coming back. I mean, there's talk mm-hmm. of all these people coming back. Louis C.K. coming back, and Tom Brokaw coming back, and mm-hmm. the women don't quite come back.
They don't make a comeback. Well, I mean, to that point, I will say that Monica Lewinsky, right, I've also spent some time on her Twitter page, and I think she's an amazing human being.
She is. She's
really
smart.
If you listen to her TED Talk, she's great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she's one of the people, she's one of few people who I think can pick up an issue and understand how that issue does not stand in isolation from all of the other issues that impact it, right?
Yeah.
So she is now an anti-bullying advocate, and she understands how police brutality can be seen as a bullying situation, right? And mm-hmm. and she thinks critically about all of the issues in the world and applies her advocacy to that issue, and I really appreciate that about
her. She's a great person who I think will never get to be a great person.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, I really think that's true. All right, before we go to the break, we're going to go to a break. We're going to come back. We're going to make some recommendations. But Benny was kind enough. I don't know if you can do this for another person, but you know, Benny was kind enough to go on the Wu-Tang name generator.
I'm selfless that way.
Yeah. If I turn out to be some version of Old Dirty Bastard, I'm going to be very upset about
this.
But,
all right. So I guess the story is that Wu-Tang Clan, you know, the group, you know, came up with this rap name generator. And that's how Donald Glover, the story goes, mm-hmm. got the name Childish Gambino.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I thought maybe in advance of meeting with you all today, I would take the liberty of putting in all our names. Mm. So we'll start with our host, Colin McEnroe.
I love
According to the Wu-Tang name generator, fearless mastermind.
Okay.
Right. I think that works.
All right.
Okay.
I can live with it.
Mercy Quay, Wacko Swami.
Wow.
Nice. Does it feel right or no?
The reason it feels right is because I think I've gotten that from the generator.
Oh, you've gotten it. Okay, you've done the generator. Pedro, you are Shrieking Ninja.
I'll take that.
He's right. Taking it.
I like the diametric.
Yeah. I also did Jonathan McNichol, one of the producers, not remembering that Betsy Kaplan was going to be here, and I'm so sorry. I will look you up
Betsy
later.
Betsy Kaplan already has a Wu-Tang name that RZA gave her. So
I'm covered.
Nice.
Okay, so Jonathan McNichol, Drunken Prophet. And finally, me, Benny Klein, Scratchin' Dreamer.
Scratchin' Dreamer. Nice.
All
right.
I just don't know that any of these would work in the industry.
They're not working right now. I'm
Wacko Swami, maybe.
Fearless Mastermind.
I think
I think it would get reduced to just Fearless. You would just be called Fearless after some point.
Listen, as long as I avoided ODB, I'm fine. All right. We'll take a little break. We'll come back with some non-Wu-Tang recommendations for you.
Monica Bash, sweet loving for Monica.
Yes, indeed, we are back. We're here at Gateway Community College, where WNPR has satellite studios in the studios with me to do the news are Benny Klein, Mercy Quay, and Pedro Soto. It's time to say some thank yous. So Jonathan McNichol is down here on the board getting everything together, and Carlos Mejia and Betsy Kaplan came down in the Connecticut Public Radio party van to help out. Carlos has been in here. Have you just been tweeting the whole time? Is that what you're doing over there? Yeah, he's been live tweeting the show at WNPR Colin. So it would be good, by the way, if you're that kind of person, to be following his tweets at WNPR Colin. Anyway, thanks to Carlos and Betsy for being here in New Haven with me and Jonathan today. Who else do I have? The part of Bill Curry was played by Paperboy. On Monday, what we're going to do is, for the fourth consecutive time, we are not booking guests. I am going to spend Sunday meditating until I come up with some kind of overarching conversational theme, and then I am just going to take phone calls. And so we've done this the last three Mondays. It's been kind of fun talking to you folks out there, so we're going to try this one more time. So that's the plan. I think that's all I have to tell you, other than it is time to make some recommendations. Mercy, you ready to go first?
I am. Every recommendation that I've made on the show since I've started contributing has been somewhat space themed, and that is because I am a space nerd. I recently got a tattoo of the solar system. I am showing the group here a tattoo that I have of the solar system. And so my two recommendations are podcasts. One is, I think I made this last time, but if I haven't, I just want to be want to make it again for redundancy. Star Talk, which is Neil deGrasse Tyson's podcast, and Chuck Nice is a comedian that is his co-host on it, and Bill Nye does it as well. Bill Nye also has a Netflix series coming out called Bill Nye Save the World. You should check that out. And also there is a podcast called Are We There Yet? It is about interstellar travel and our journey to Mars. And that is all.
That is plenty. Binnie, you want to go next?
Yes, I sure do. I'm so thrilled to have the opportunity to recommend an artist. And this goes back to the art as politics and transgressive, and it wraps it all up into this beautiful circle. So Brett Bender is an artist I became aware of on Facebook. We became friends. He's in Philadelphia, and you may know him from a book he did called The Coloring Book for the Superintelligent. Mm-hmm. And he also does political art, and there was one that got pretty famous in the recent election. And I'm sorry, I just had to sigh. And it is a picture of, it's for the Democratic Party, and it's a picture of the donkey, but in women's shoes. And I might say, not high heels or stilettos, but you can tell they're women's shoes, and it says something like, it's time. Mm-hmm. Would that that were the case. But his most recent project that I want to promote is called Target Series. And he's very influenced by Childish Gambino and This Is America. And he took a bunch of his paintings, which are, after all, his babies, and he got an AK-15. And the story of him getting the AK-15 is pretty interesting in and of itself. It's an artist statement that goes with the work. And he took his paintings or reproductions down to a gun range, and he shot them. And the images of these are very startling and very beautiful in a weird, disturbing way.
So we didn't lose track of this. Where can people see all this?
Where can they see it? Yeah. So you will go to bbender27arts.com. And I'll just tell you one last sentence from his artist statement. We began as cowboys and Indians. What we do with the rest of our Constitution is what makes our difference.
Mm. Boy, that really does fit into This Is America. Binnie Klein, great recommendations. We'll try to get that link up on our webpage at wnpr.org/Colin. Pedro Soto, what do you have for us?
Okay. In terms of traditions, I have usually had some New Haven, what's happening in New Haven.
Yeah.
And actually this weekend, the Westville Village Art Walk is happening, which is great. It's a lot of fun. It is a free annual community-based arts festival that spans three blocks in historic Westville Village and Edgewood Park. And it's tonight and tomorrow. So it's about 30 vendors. There's music. There's art. It's a lot of fun. And Westville is a fun place that should be more visited. So please stop on in.
And it is not your typical, you know, community of you might get the police called on you while black. So definitely go and visit.
Yes.
You are welcome in the community.
And if it does happen, just say, I know Mark Oppenheimer.
Exactly.
And the police will release you immediately.
That's true.
So, well, thanks for that recommendation. You know, I just, first of all, I have to see two things based. Do you have another recommendation?
No, that's it.
Okay, so you both made me think of two different things that I wasn't going to mention. So one of them is I just want to remember Isaac Epstein, who ran this incredible bookstore in downtown Hartford for many years. And Binnie made me think of him because on one occasion, a man I know, Isaac was this very sort of quietly mordant wit, and he presided over this bookstore, and a customer that he knew very well walked in one day and said, asked for a copy of a book. I think that was called Mind Games for the Superintelligent. And so Isaac went and got it off the shelf and turned to him and said, I'm presuming you want this gift wrapped, which was a great line. Also, I just want to say I was in Wichita Falls, Texas, last week, and I was giving a speech. And Wichita Falls, Texas is this place where they've got like all this really kind of nasty big box development all twirled around in this kind of highway interchange. And I said, what should I do after my speech? And they said, there's an art walk. And I drove into the center of town, which is essentially untouched. It's got all these beautiful old buildings from the 40s, 30s, 20s that nobody cares about anymore. These artists had taken them over.
Wow.
And it was like being in a TV, fictional TV show or something. These wonderful people who are like doing these creative things in this city. I loved it so much. I'm going to recommend quickly another Twitter feed. And that is the Twitter feed of Maggie Haberman, who's, of course, famously the Trump whisperer. Her Twitter feed is like a magazine. It's like a publication or something like that. I mean, she retweets what she thinks is important and interesting. If you just like followed all the links that she retweets, you'd have a pretty good understanding of what's going on today. Also, very quickly, The Gist by Mike Pesca. We love The Gist. We love Mike Pesca. Listen to his episode about the new nominee for CIA director. I think it's called Some Interrogations. You will understand this thing and its complexity. It's not as easy a story as you might think. All right, I'm done. We're done. Thanks to everybody. Thanks for coming here to Gateway College. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back on Monday. Thank you, Mercy and Benny and Pedro. We just...